in the terms of the new world normal, it's like, you know, if every child could walk in and know that whatever their family construct was, they were going to be welcomed. And every parent knew that when they were going to walk in and talk to an administrator, or every step parent knew that the person was not going to set them out, like not going to exclude them because they didn't fit into the checkbox on the form, it would be a better way.
Welcome to the New World Normal podcast. I'm Debbie Harrell, your host. And twice a month, I'm speaking with some amazing humans who are disrupting norms and working to create a more inclusive and holistic society. These people are using their sphere of influence, no matter how large or small, to positively impact the world around them. They'll be sharing their expertise as well as sharing stories of resiliency and hope. We'll be talking about the issues that are affecting us all, from the environment, human rights, social issues, criminal justice, and education. We'll talk about our healthcare systems, wellness, and food, from how it's cultivated and distributed to how it's prepared and consumed. Basically, we're going to talk about all the systems in our society that aren't necessarily working for the benefit of the many. We'll strategize and collaborate on how we as a collective can intentionally make better choices every day that will lead to a positive change in the world around us. Because in the end, it's up to us to solve these problems. There is no magic potion or magic wand. It is us and our daily choices and how we spend our time and how we invest our resources. Intrigued? Stick around and have a listen, and by all means, click like or subscribe on your favorite podcast source. Hello, welcome back to the New World Normal podcast. I am Debbie Harrell. Today we're talking about families. What makes up a family? Where these definitions come from? How common is really that idyllic nuclear family of Leave It to Beaver lore? And it's actually a topic that's very near and dear to my heart, being raised by a single mom and then being part of an extended blended family as an adult. I was really excited for this conversation. We're talking with Amy Stone, who is a certified life coach who got her start working with endurance athletes, but then decided to pivot and lean into her lived experience as part of a blended family. You will hear a reference made in the beginning of the conversation. Amy and I had spoken before when we first met about blended families, and I told her our little inside joke of our family is we don't refer to it as a family tree because it's not really tall. We refer to it as a family hedge because it's short and it's wide and it encompasses a lot of people. And I feel like a hedge is very protective of the family unit, and that's how we kind of view our family, a little tongue-in-cheek. But I really hope you enjoy this conversation all about what makes up a family and how to look at it a little differently. Welcome back to the New World Normal podcast. Today, I'm here speaking with Amy Stone, who is a blended family coach. So we are going to be discussing deconstructing and possibly disrupting some of the stigma around family structures. I know I have a pretty personal relationship to the topic in that I was raised by a single mom and then became a single-ish mom, but definitely part of a larger extended blended family, bonus family, family hedge, as we often talked about.
I have used that. I've used that since you shared that with me, because I just think that is a beautiful visual way to represent the whole idea that sometimes we don't fit in the picture that we're holding out. And that doesn't mean that anything's wrong. It might mean that the picture is a bad example.
Right. Maybe the picture needs to be changed. Exactly.
Right.
And I know, because growing up as the daughter of a single mom, even though divorce and all that was much more common in the 80s, there was still a lot of shame and stigma.
Yes.
Around. And so then when I ended up raising my kids as a single mom, I identified as a single mom. I didn't want any of that shame to be, you know, what my kids experienced.
Yeah.
And so how we navigate that. I know we have had a very good off-camera conversation. And one of the things that you shared with me is that you had read a book recently about
the history of the family structure.
Yes.
And I wonder if that might be a great place to start off.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So there's an author. She is a historian, I think. She's a historian, a sociologist, something like that. Her name is Stephanie Kuntz. Kuntz, yes, that's correctly. Correct. And she has written a couple of books about the history of marriage. And this is specific to the American concept, I want to say, because marriage and relationships, they really do vary when you go around the world. Right. And so that definitely is a perspective to throw into the mix. But we all suffer from this whole comparisonitis thing. Like, we look at the people around us and we think that we should be like them. Right. And we look at that in really weird ways. But anyway, she has written a book called The Way We Never Were, American Families and the Nostalgia Trap.
I love that title.
Oh, my gosh. Right. It's really fascinating because it's she calls it the myth of the American family, like that we are looking at this idea of, you know, to throw TV under the bus, like the Leave It to Beaver, June Cleaver family never existed as the norm. Like, it never was a thing. And there are going to be people listening like, oh, no, that's the way I grew up. You know, that was my family. So it's not to say that it hasn't existed, but that it's not the evolution of family, if you really look at how families have grown up. And for many of us, if we use that picture of any of it, like Leave It to Cleaver or any of those sort of things, one of the TV families that I grew up with was the Cosby Show, which is an amazing example because the actor became a huge pop icon for like failures of morality, right? Like, so, because it was not real. If we use that as a framework for judging our success as caregivers or as wives or as husbands or as children, we are just setting ourselves up for an impossible situation. It is an embodiment of that whole thing. If you judge a fish by how well it climbs a tree, you know, he's never going to be seen as a success, you know, so
it makes sense. And the completely unattainable ideal. And in reality, why are we striving for this ideal that if it's not going to work for us and our family, why are we going to try and force our square peg into the round hole?
Yes. So when I heard about this book, I was already had been married a long time and had gone through a lot of my own personal journey. So I didn't read this as like a tool for like my actual personal journey, but it was really, really supportive to what I had experienced as a person, right? So, because I definitely, my parents were divorced. I was raised by a single dad.
Oh.
And he had, so talk about shame. I am 48. I turned 49 in a month. And so when I was an adolescent, it was in the time where we put our own holes in the jeans. You would go and buy a pair of jeans and then put holes in them, right? And my dad was a super open-minded person, but he was so stressed out by the fact that I did this to my clothes because he said, "You don't understand. Like, people are going to think that I am dressing you in these clothes with holes." And I was like, "Nah, it's the style. Nobody's going to think that." But this was legit pressure.
So he was feeling the pressure and the stress.
He was feeling the pressure because it was really unusual in the 80s to meet a single dad. Like, it was, and I, you know, he did a good job of shielding me from that because I didn't find myself answering that question until I was an adult. But I presume that he probably got that a lot. Like, "Oh, but why? Why are you the primary parent?" Because it was really pretty uncommon then. And one of the things, and you grew up with a single mom, right? And so one of the phrases that people use to describe families that I find really confusing, and I don't know if ever other people experience this, is that people will say, "Oh, you came from a broken home." And I always think to myself, I don't know. I did not feel that way. In the moment, I was just in my house. It was what I knew. I wasn't aware until later that there was some other missing piece that I was not getting. I don't know.
It's really interesting you say that. And yeah, that is that's not a very good term. And we should just get rid of that one. Let's expunge that one.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking of going back to you saying like the Leave It to Beaver.
Yes.
Unattainable ideal, that it wasn't as common and maybe not the way we originated. And I'm thinking back to when I was growing up and looking around at the other families, and there were no Leave It to Beaver families.
No.
And so I'm thinking about like, where was I feeling the shame? It definitely wasn't from my peers as much as it was from like the structures that are the institutions like school.
Right.
I still remember setting up something and I was talking, it was when I was older, I was probably in high school because they needed my mother's maiden name.
Okay. Yeah.
And what's your mother's maiden name? And I gave them my last name because my mom was never married. So we shared the same and it was her main, and they kept pressing me. No, her maiden name.
Yes.
Before she was married. I'm like, that is her maiden name. She was never married. And they're like, oh, but the way they were pressing me, like I was ignorant and didn't understand what a maiden name was. And like, they just couldn't have the concept that, or couldn't grasp the concept that, you know, she was never married and yet she has a child.
Right. Oh my gosh. And, you know, yet one of the crazy things about families and the, you know, like school is the first community for children. It's the first place that a lot of kids go away from their parents and they form their own things. And so the administrators and the teachers in schools, they have such outsized influence on how we feel as acceptable. Like it's like a teacher who welcomes you into the classroom and makes you feel loved is like such a treasured thing. And meanwhile, the administrator who can't figure out how to put your family name onto a form, that can be a really jarring experience. So I currently live in Miami, Florida, where we have a really, really international community. And one of the really common things that happens in elementary schools around here is that children with international combinations of names, where there are several countries where they combine the family names together to make these very long hyphenated last names. And when the name doesn't fit into the space on the form, like now these are digital forms, but every year at the start of the school, parents are like, oh my gosh, like, you know, they only have 27 characters for the last name and our name doesn't fit. And it's a huge problem for the family because the kid's name is not showing up correctly. And, you know, not related to anything, but props to anybody who does graduation ceremonies and name announcements in any school ever, because that's a huge amount of pressure, right?
Sidebar, my daughter just graduated from college and she's like, they had us call in and say our names. And still the woman up there was, you could just tell,
really
butchering like every other name, and you're like, oh my gosh.
It's so funny. We were at some event where this saint of a person was going through and doing all of these names and just nailing these complicated international names, and then they got to a name that was European, no accents, very simple, you know, 10 letters, and just he just absolutely flubbed it. And it was hilarious because it was like, and John Smith, you know, like, you know, just really just, you know, the one that was easy ended up with the boo-boo, which just is one of those funny life experiences. But yeah, that school experience and fitting into the school, I think a lot of us really stress about that. I think the parents I work with today, the parents and step parents I work with today, many of them struggle with school related experiences, like who gets to go to back to school night? Will I be seen as an active partner? Will I be judged by the administrators and the other parents? You know, and everybody has their own experience with that. It is interesting that we have so much wrapped up in that community, and do we fit and will we be seen and honored for the way that we are? And I do think I like in the terms of the new world normal, it's like, you know, if every child could walk in and know that whatever their family construct was, they were going to be welcomed. And every parent knew that when they were going to walk in and talk to an administrator, or every step parent knew that the person was not going to set them out, like not going to exclude them because they didn't fit into the checkbox on the form, it would be a better way.
Definitely. I can feel that, like the back to school, I think about navigating that with the multi-sense of parents and the, and you know what a blessing it is when the bonus parents, the step parents want to be involved, but then also there's that dance, right? Of,
yeah.
Because when I was in the role of step parent, like I want to be involved, but I also don't want to step on toes. Like I want to make sure I'm not appeared as like steamrolling or inserting myself someplace where I'm not necessary, but I want to be involved, you know, like, so it is a little bit of a balance and a dance. How did you come to do this work?
So my lived experience is that I was a stepmom before I was a mom. I did not know that I was going to do this work when I became a stepmom. I often reflect on the fact that I should have been paying closer attention had I known that I was going to be telling all of these stories. So a lot of times when I tell stories from my beginning days as a stepmom, I will actually go to my husband or my stepkids and I'll be like, do you remember this? Like, how do you remember it, to double check? Because I was in the middle of it trying to make it work. And I did not know that 20 plus years later, I would hang out a shingle and be like, I can help you. So, but the way it happened was that I decided to take a life coaching course. I was curious about it. I was coaching triathletes and runners, and I signed up to take this course because I thought I could do a much better job helping people with their motivation and their mindset. And anybody who's in your audience who's listened to this, all of these coaching courses are really wonderful self-exploration journeys, right? So I went on this journey. I really enjoyed it. And as a result of that, I did decide. I was like, okay, you know what? I really love doing this work and this is what I want to do. And then I was faced with the question. And the question was, so who am I going to help? Like, who can I actually help? And that's, you know, I don't know if you went through that when you were starting your business. Who can I help?
Oh, the whole niche.
The whole niche and the thing. Niche down.
I don't want to.
Right? So I actually had a worksheet. My business coach had given me a worksheet and I did not, I was like, ah, whatever, I'm going to do this. But one of the things was what do people already ask you? What are the things that people are already coming to you for support or so on and so forth? And I did spend about a week thinking about it. And I realized that since I was 10 years old and the only divorced kid in the family, I mean, in the classroom or wherever it was, that people do talk to me about their families. They do talk to me openly about what's happening in their families and they feel comfortable telling me these stories. Now, I never, before I was a coach, I didn't have any tools to help people. So I just would listen and, you know, be my natural non-judgmental stuff person. But when I looked at this worksheet, I was like, oh, this is a thing that I do have lived experience with. This is a place where I can really honestly say I've walked this walk. I know that there are challenges. I'm aware of the fact that it's very hard to find a helpful, supportive voice that gives you tools to be happy, right? Not to diagnose. I'm not a doctor. I'm a life coach. I don't diagnose, not to assess blame or liability. I'm not a lawyer. I'm a life coach. I help people find a way to be happier and more content and more fulfilled in their family of choice.
Love that. And I love people that are life coaches that have a little, at least a little bit of training in the, I do not diagnose,
right.
You know, I, all the things we don't do as life coaches, because a lot of people still don't get what life coaches do. And, I know for myself, it was life-changing when I started working with coaches. And that's part of the reason I became a coach.
Yeah.
And I haven't quite niched down yet. I'm still resisting that, but definitely drawing from lived experience, which blended family is definitely part of that. And I think about it, I have a funny story of, it was me and my daughter's father, we were going to a concert, but we were going with his ex-wife and her new husband.
Yeah.
And I was sharing with someone in our community, like, oh yeah, we're going to go see Rod Stewart. And who are you going with? And I said, who I'm going with. And they're like, are you going to stop by Jerry Springer on the way?
Right, right. Well, I tell people, you know, so I do have my, I'm not divorced, but my husband was, and to be fair, they did not have a high conflict divorce. They had an amicable divorce, but it is still, you know, there's all of that. But when my dad died and I had a toddler and a very young baby, my husband's ex-wife watched our kids for like 30 hours, right? That was who we called. That's where the stepkids were. That's where they knew that house, all of that. And I could not have planned that ahead of time or anything.
No, and that's the beautiful part of it. If people lean more into like, this is my family,
yes,
and this is part of my support and the support for my children. So why wouldn't it naturally be a support for me too?
Right. And there are lots of situations. I will say, I want to put this into like a quantifier, right? Because there are tons of situations with blended families where the reason there is a fracture is so severe that that's not an option. Right. And so that is a reality.
Well, and I would imagine that there's situations where it's not safe.
Exactly. Exactly. So I do know I'm extremely lucky that I had that network, and it's a very privileged.
But I also think that if people, and you probably see this in the people you work with, that are working on it and working towards it, it makes it much more likely that there'll be less of a fracture.
Absolutely. And I tell people, so I do where possible. Right. There's the qualifier, like where possible. So like if there's, you know, a death or a legal reason or a safety reason or whatever, there's a reason that their parents are not involved or can't be involved, it's not safe, all of those things. Where possible, right? We all have people in our family that we don't like very much. Like I'm talking about your big extended family, right? Aunts and uncles and like crazy relatives that, you know, we don't have a lot in common with. We don't see very often. We don't know very well. They're part of our family. Right. And so if you can take a step back with this blended family and see it as the hedge, right? The hedge that crosses the property line, and it's growing around the fence over there, and it's maybe a little bit unruly over there, and there's somebody who doesn't do things the way you want, and just open it up a little bit and think about it. It's like, okay, so this can be a family, like a big, big, beautiful, messy family. And when you need the support, you are still very much connected. You're more connected to your family in a lot of ways than you are to so many other people that we spend so much more time with, you know? So it can be, it's sometimes it's a reframe that helps, because there is, I don't know if you have experienced this, but there sometimes is tremendous pressure in the step-parent divorce community to just, it validates all the anger and validates all the meanness, and it's perfectly acceptable to be really nasty to people. You know, it's almost celebrated. And so sometimes
it's fun and juicy, right, and gossipy.
And gossipy, and, right. And sometimes you just have to decide, like, oh, you know, that's not the best place for my energy right now.
Right. I'd rather have the boring existence. And I know that the few times when we've been able to pull off going back to that family and being closer, it's that lived experience and the history, right?
Yes.
You don't have to explain all the details. We joke. Also, family hedge is one of our things, but also, like, if you really want to understand the family, we're going to need a flow chart.
Right.
You have a whiteboard, you know?
It's one of the very first things I do with my new clients is I let them tell me everybody who's in their family. Yeah.
And so to not have to you can talk in shortcut, like they already know.
They already know. And there's no shame, right? Because like you were saying, the shame. Now, a lot of times in a blended family, people will only talk about a portion of it. They just deliver you the piece that they think you're ready to see. You know, so they'll talk about, you know, one or two kids, or they'll talk about the kids who are in this school, or they'll talk about the kids in the class, or whatever it is, right? And there's very few spaces where they're able to be, you know, here's the whole package, you know, here's the ex, here's the brother-in-law, here's the remarriages, here's everything. And this is where it is.
I feel like I should have a confessional right now, because there's definitely times in my life when I leave out details.
Sure.
Number one, you don't have time to explain everything. Number two, you don't have to explain everything to everybody. But the fact of the matter is, and since, you know, I should probably share more of my story with my audience. My story is I have two kids, two different dads, never married either of those dads, because I was adamant, like, just because I got pregnant, that's not a reason to get married. And in hindsight, it was a good idea not to.
Worked out.
But both of them had prior relationships with that had children.
All right. Yeah.
So, and then one of them, my daughter's father, ended up going on and remarrying and having two more. So we have siblings galore.
Yes.
From, gosh, I think the oldest one is 40 The youngest one is probably 13.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, because you guys are all falling into the same range. Sometimes it can be even bigger if there's a bigger gap in the parents. And so in the kids, they're like a spider web, right? So like sometimes the marriages and the divorces, the parents are sort of stacked apart. But then the siblings and the half siblings and the quarter siblings and the non-siblings that live in the same house, right? They sometimes form a web that is very, very confusing. And so to the adults, not to the kids. But there was a time where, so my husband's ex had twins that are a year older than my daughter. And so they sort of grew up together, right? They sort of grew up together, but they're not actually related. And there was a time where my oldest stepdaughter, who's now in her 30s, came to me and she was like, so this one is asking me how they're related to that one. And when I said that they weren't related, then they said, so can we marry that? They were very young. Can we get married to them? And she was like, no. And she's like, and that's not the true answer. They actually could. But I really felt convicted that I should tell them right from the get-go that that was not allowed. You know,
that's not on the table.
That's not on the table. But you know, in a small child mind, they were trying to figure out, like, am I related? Like, what's allowed here? And so on and so forth. And, you know, that's a part of their, like, they're not actually really, but it's a part of their like family extended thing. So like my oldest stepson is getting married in a month and all of those kids will be there and all of those kids will be in the wedding party, you know, so it all comes together.
If you're enjoying this conversation, you'll love the discussions happening in the New World Normal community where we meet regularly to discuss personal growth and social issues because we know when we do our work, we're better able to navigate this ever-changing world. Be sure to follow the link in the show notes for more information.
And that's honestly one of my favorite times is like the graduations and the weddings when everybody is all together and it's fun.
It can be a lot of fun. In the beginning, it can be stressful because you don't know where.
For me, it's fun. Yes.
Yeah. In the beginning, I remember in the beginning as a stepmom, not quite knowing exactly what I was supposed to do. And then during the pandemic, we had a kid that graduated. And so during the pandemic, I don't know if you had kids that were in school. There were very, very small amounts of tickets. So in a blended family, often you have a lot of extra adults. So we're very good, all of us in our family, at getting all of the extra tickets. Working the parent tree, making sure that we have all of the tickets for the aunts, the grandparents, all of the extra parents. During the pandemic, that was a lot harder to do. Like, so there was a graduation. My stepson graduated from law school and there were only two tickets. And when my husband came to me, he was like, this is going to be so hard. And I was like, what are you talking about? It's not going to be hard at all. You and your ex-wife are going to go. You are the parents of this kid. The rest of us will watch it on Zoom and or whatever. I think it was Zoom, whatever it was on the live stream. Maybe it was just a website. And he's like, you don't want to go? I was like, no, I'm not saying I don't want to go. I don't have the option of going. There's only two tickets. And the two most important people for this person are you and your ex-wife. Like, go. I'm not going to be upset about it. I'd love to be there. Everybody would love to be there. There's only two tickets.
And that's part of what we were saying, like the working at it.
Yes.
Like, sure, of course she would love to go, but it makes more sense. And it's more important for this particular child that these two people are there, you know, removing yourself from the equation.
Yes.
And looking at it from what is the best for this person who it's his day, let's do it for him.
And it's much easier to do that when that person is 24 than when they're five and it's like a ballet recital. And, you know, it's so much easier to say and talk about when you're not in the moment than when you're in the moment. Sometimes these things, like all family things, sometimes these things feel so critically important.
Well, and not to say that there isn't, like you said, I would love to be there.
Yeah.
But it's just not an option. So you're going to have your feelings about it. And those are valid. Like you're sad or, yeah. But it just makes more sense.
Yeah.
The other way.
Yeah. Yeah. No, 100%. The feelings are always valid. Sometimes the feelings are very confusing. That's just true for adulthood, right? You know, like that's one of the things. Like sometimes
life is very confusing.
Life can be very confusing. It's okay to be confused. And I don't know if this is true in your family, Hedge. In my blended family, it's very helpful to try and have that whole concept of positive intention. You know, like when people accidentally step on your toes, like, well, why did you do that? Okay, well, let's back up a second. You know. Let's just give them space to have had a good intention, you know?
Yeah, it is important to assume the best rather than the worst out the gate.
Yeah.
You know, like, and I feel like a lot of people, especially with the online, you know, you're saying something in type in just several words that you've typed on your phone and people are reading it and interpreting it in the worst way possible. Like, can't we all just leave a little area for maybe they meant that a different way?
Yeah. And it's so funny with that. So a couple weeks ago, my husband and I were making plans for the weekend and I sent him a thing and he replied back and I read it and I thought I understood it. And it was a combination of I didn't read it closely enough. And also he didn't type what he thought he typed. Right. So anyway, I was trying to say, hey, we should watch this game on TV. And he said something like, it was a blowout. It was supposed to be a blowout game. And he's like, yeah, I don't even want to. He meant to say, I don't want to go out and do it. I just want to sit on my couch so I can flip channels. Right. But he said something that was like, I wouldn't even want to see that on my couch. I thought he meant he wanted to go out. So then I made us plans to go to another place. So then we go and he like, whatever. He was like, fine. He didn't say anything to me, but he was along for the ride the way you do in a partnership, right? Like sometimes you're just like, all right, whatever. And this was obviously not a big deal, right? It was like lunch. And so we go and then he makes a comment about how he never meant to be. I can't believe we're eating this. We're eating in a restaurant watching this game, which is such a blowout. And I'm like, what are you talking about? You wanted to eat out. And he's like, no, I didn't. And I was like, absolutely you didn't. He's like, I'm going to pull out the email. And I was like, you better pull out the email because I know I read it.
We have written evidence.
Exactly. And it was exactly like what you're talking about. It was like, it just was a miscommunication, a misintent. And this was, I mean, we can laugh about this because it's not at all a big deal, but so much planning we do with families, people will put meaning on things and get their feelings hurt, and which it sounds like there's a judgment, but be hurt by things that are maybe misunderstandings. I don't know when this will go live, but we're coming up on the gifting season for the winter holidays. And oh boy, can that be a minefield of communication.
Yes.
Yeah.
Difficult times over the holidays.
Difficult times over the holidays.
Yeah. I feel like I'm still suffering a little PTSD from that.
It's hard.
Well, and also it's a lot of the pressures put on us by society and like having that perfect holiday, hell that is.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. No, exactly. And that's another one of those things like that I think is easier when the magic can be happening, you know, when you buy something at a toy store. It's a lot harder to make that happen when you're talking about older people trying to figure out what they were. Combining families doesn't even have to be a blended family. When you're combining gifting traditions between any two families, sometimes you run into differences. My mom had this whole thing in her family that you never gave cash. Like it was, somehow it was disrespectful to give money. Right. Like you should know somebody well enough to buy
to pick them.
Right. That was the thing. And that's a wonderful sentiment, right? If your family does that, it's a wonderful sentiment. My husband's family is perfectly fine giving money. They do not.
Everybody gets gift cards.
Right? They do not subscribe for that.
Done.
In fact, one time my husband, when we had been married a very long time, when we were trying to figure out, my husband and I no longer give each other gifts for most holidays because we share finances and we just buy the things that we want. But years ago, it was a gifting holiday and he didn't know what he wanted because he's a typical person that has everything that he's ever going to need and he's impossible to shop for. I don't know if people have husbands that are like this, but partners that are like this. So I said, hey, what do you want? And he said, why don't you get me a gift card to XYZ store? And I listened to it and I heard it. And then I walked into the other room and I thought to myself, why would I buy him a gift card? We have the same money.
With our money.
And then I walked back in. I was like, I just want to clarify this. Why would I buy you a gift card when we share finances? Why don't you just go to, like, I'll just give you an empty box. You can just go to the store whenever you want and buy whatever you want. I'm going to pay a fee. I'm going to pay a gift card fee, you know, for you to spend your own money. That makes no sense. And we laughed about it like forever. He's like, but I like getting gift cards. I was like, I get it. I totally get it. But this makes no sense.
Well, it's probably because that's what he was used to, right?
So it's absolutely his tradition. He just hadn't. And also, he hadn't thought it through. When he realized what I was saying, he was like, he's like, that is really funny. That is really, really funny.
Yeah. I feel like as I've gotten older, I just am not as attached to the actual day and the gift as much as the time, which is harder to organize, right? As they're older and they have their own lives and they're off living them. So yeah, I feel so like that's why I get myself worked up. Like, I just want to have a little of your time. What do you think about that?
Right. It is much harder for everybody, the time. And especially as they create their own relationships. And when you have a blended family, if you have a blended family, which one of the blends, like, so I work with people who are mostly like remarrying, divorced, remarried, widowed, remarried, whatever, remarried. But there is a blend that happens in the family when that gets forgotten, which is the in-laws, right? So like whenever we marry people, we inherit these mother-in-law and father-in-law and sister-in-law and brother-in-law. And that's also another form of the blend. Were there years ago for Thanksgiving, she might've been college. She was either in high school or a teenage. It was Thanksgiving. And so there were all these family meals being put together, and it must have been college. She couldn't have been living with us. Anyway, there was one person she kept asking me if I would move the time of the meal that I was making. And eventually I said, hey, what is going on that you keep asking me to do this? Right? Because there were other people coming and going and saying, and this poor kid, young adult, was trying to get her
to make the rounds.
Yes, and planning to eat at all of these things and not telling anybody so that she did not step on anybody's toes, right? And grandparents, aunts and uncles. And I was like, oh my gosh, you do not need to eat at my table, right? For this, right? Like if you want to stop by for 5 minutes, great. If there's anything I'm making that you want me to set aside, like, you know, special dishes, but I am not going to be offended if you have other commitments with this. Cause you know, there was a partnership. There was a relationship. So it was first dinners at the other house kind of thing. Oh. You know, I was like, oh my gosh, remove me from the pressure of this. You can come over tomorrow. You can, you know, whatever. Nowadays, this was before we were all Zooming and stuff like that. Nowadays, you could be like, oh, you can Zoom in, whatever. But it can be a lot of pressure on the kids.
And that's another instance of it, you know, removing yourself from the equation and like looking at it, what's the best for the kid. And also what I'm hearing is the communication.
Yes.
Clarification.
Yes.
Getting better understanding when there's the gray area, like what's going on here?
Yeah. Having the ability, that is something that I have learned and practiced. And maybe it's because I grew up in a family with divorced parents, but when I don't understand, I have a natural inclination to not be afraid to ask, hey, why is this happening? And sometimes that gets me into a maelstrom of a Pandora's box of a situation I didn't want to be in. But most of the time, it gets additional information to understand. So I'm not guessing why people are doing things.
Yeah. No, it's huge. And I definitely have that filter of, do I really want to know the answer to this question?
Right. No, well, that is, if anybody who's parented teenagers, there is a piece where there's a time in your life where you learn, do I really want to know? And everybody answers that question differently. There's no, some people really do like to know. And others of us are like, we're going to wait, and no news is good news.
But I also like that you said that you practice, like you have the practice of getting clarification when you're not quite sure. Because it's not necessarily a muscle that everyone exercises regularly.
Right.
And so if it is uncomfortable, then practice at it. I can just see like so much time wasted in the confusion and misunderstanding, and then the hurt feelings that might have not even been necessary.
Yeah.
Because it was just a misunderstanding in the beginning.
And I do think, right, sometimes like I struggle with this as a coach, right? Sometimes I worry that because I coach blended families, people may feel like I'm holding up my family or my parenting or my wifing or my adulting as an example of perfection. And the truth is that it's not that at all. Like I can give examples of things that I have done well. Sometimes I can give many more examples of things I've learned by messing them up. And, you know, I would never want to give people I really struggle with this as a new coach. I don't want people to think that my life is my life is not perfect. My relationships are not perfect. You know, there are times where I remember to ask for clarification, and there are other times where time goes by and I look back and I'm like, oh, if only I had stopped and asked, that would have been so much better. That's just the messy human experience, right? That's just the messy human experience.
Totally. And that is also one of the things I love about coaching is like, we are not perfect.
Right.
humans. And it's not our job to be perfect, right? We come alongside our clients and they know what's best for their family. Sure, we might have a little lived experience right. where we can contribute a little more, but the reality is asking them about their experience and learning more, they are going to be able to lead the way.
And hopefully, yeah. And also permission to not get it right. You know?
Oh yeah.
Permission to not get it right. Yeah.
Because as we fail, hopefully we're getting feedback and correcting.
Yes, 100%.
My notes, I feel like we covered everything that I wanted to talk about. We could talk about all the different kinds of family structures. Like I know you were very careful to not say step parents.
Right.
With the bonus parents, I heard that somewhere along the line. I'm like, I like that.
Right.
Bonus kids.
So yeah, especially because, you know, we're recording this in 2022 and we are in a new sort of vocabulary for how we are reframing how we speak about different genders and pronouns and all of these things.
And the genders, and also, sorry,
no, go ahead.
To interrupt you, but the fact that a family could just be a partnership,
yes,
a couple.
A partnership, it can be a couple.
Choosing not to have the children.
Exactly.
You know?
And so the word mom and the word, so mom is probably the most political is the wrong word, but the most emotionally connected word. Like people have a very strong attachment or emotional investment in the word mom. And then parent is next. Like, what does it mean to be a parent? And this goes way beyond a blended family situation. You've got adoptive parents, you've got foster parents, you've got this. And so when I was doing this, you know, I went bumbling into my blended family personal experience with no idea what I was doing. And like a lot of this stuff I didn't have opinions about, but it can be a really big tipping point. So I say adults in blended families. Now, blended family can mean anything. Like it just is a really, really broad term. And so when I talk about it, I'm talking about when there are children from previous relationships that are combined with caregivers, right? That's usually what I'm talking about. It could mean different things to different people. So it's a super confusing thing. I'm not saying that I have the right way of addressing this, but I do like to give space for people to choose the words that they want to use for this. People use bonus mom. Some people have very strong feelings about the word step parent. And I just, you know, it can be a very powerful word. And there's also that other side of it with words. Like this is like a totally non-family related thing where people will try and normalize or remove the power from words. There are people who talk about, and I didn't know this until I got into doing this as a business, there are people who talk about a step family. If you had walked up to me 10 years ago and referred to my family as a step family, I would have totally thought you were talking to somebody else. I didn't even know it existed as a word. And so I just try and open it up to...
I'm like, what is that? Is that the whole other...
I'm not entirely sure.
Section?
I'm not entirely sure. That's the reason, like that went to me, like there was recently a step family summit. And I'm not entirely sure. I think that...
Maybe it's just referring to blended families.
I think
in
so.
A different way.
Maybe, right? Yeah. I just think that I open it up to what it means to you and allow people to choose the word that they want if they want to. And where the idea for that came, where my sensitivity to that came from, my awareness of that came from is as I get older and I was having kids, I was aware of the fact that some grandparents choose their own name for that. Have you ever run into people who don't want to be called a grandparent, so they'll pick another nickname?
Well, and I always thought, because I was given the opportunity to be called, like the mom picked the name.
Okay.
And I'm like, isn't it supposed to be what the little kid
yeah,
says?
That's what, yeah.
Naturally in be, their... Yeah. And so, and that's where, but now that as my kids are getting older, I'm like, is it something I'm supposed to decide? Right. Like, that's a lot of pressure.
Right. Exactly. I think a lot of times it is the kid sometimes it's something that so I used to joke because I was a stepmom and I was the youngest in the group. I was a very young grandma. Or maybe it's a step grandma. I don't even know if that's a thing. And
it would be a step grandma.
Step grandma, right. So, I loved to tell people, I was like, and I'm a grandma, and just see where their mind went with it, you know, because if they didn't know me and they didn't know I had an adult stepkid, they were like, ah, so what's the story here? You know, and I love to just put them in that spot and give them that thing. It's totally fine. But I have seen people, so, you know, who pick their name. And I think that it's brilliant, you know, in a lot of ways. Like, it's like, you should, you know, there should be as much power or as little power to these names and these words as we want to give them. And I think that that goes as far as people want to take it, right? And not like if there are some people who feel very strongly about what a family should be in their world, and I honor that for them, right? If it's a,
well,
know, yeah.
Yeah. And I can see, like, if they pick the name that they feel comfortable with, because they certainly don't want to be cringing every time their grandchild
absolutely
calls them grandma when they don't want to be called grandma.
Yes, exactly. And so, you know, if you want to be a step parent, if you want to be, you know, whatever, and people would ask me, they would say, what do your stepkids call you? And I was like, Amy. They call me Amy. Like, I was introduced to them as Amy. They call me Amy. And then if I needed a title in a school situation or a performance, or who is this strange woman who has showed up to pick you up, then I would either be, oh, this is my dad's wife, right? Or, or it could have been a girlfriend, whatever it was. Or, you know, sometimes they'd be, hey, this is my stepmom. And it was funny. It's funny to watch the kids go through that and sort of put it together. Like, oh, well, who is this?
This is Amy.
Right. This is Amy. This is my Amy, you know? And it doesn't go away when you're an adult. I was standing on the beach talking to a friend. This is not a coaching situation. This is just somebody I know. I live in Florida, so standing on the beach is a thing that does not
happen.
Right. Does not denote an elaborate vacation or anything. We were there in a group scenario. It was right after the holidays. So it would have been about a year ago whenever that was. So it was right after the winter holidays. This guy's my age, he's 50. Okay. And he was talking about the trip and so on and so forth. And he was stumbling over the description of this person at this event. And then this is a monologue that he's going through. And he's saying, I don't know what to call this person. This is my, you know, am I supposed to call her my stepmom? Is my husband's, my dad's wife? Who is this? And I was like, well, and this person does not probably have any idea what I do as a profession, right? So, and I was like, well, who is it? And he's like, well, you know, my mom died, right? His adult mom died, which is a sad thing. And many years later, his father has remarried and has this new wife, and they had this thing together. And so I said to him, which you will not be surprised by, I said, have you asked her or your dad what they want you to call her? He's like, no. And I was like, well, you know, that maybe that's a place to start, right? And he's like, oh, you know. And then I said, I mean, you have a mom. You're a grown up. Like, you have a whole lived life experience with your mom. I think it's perfectly reasonable that you would not feel pressure or like you need to call this person your stepmom. She's, you know, she's not mothering you. You're an adult, you know, like, and
yeah, I feel like the concise, you know, this is my dad's wife.
Yeah,
it's pretty
totally
easy
fine
to say.
But he did as a total adult, like the blah, 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 just, you know, verbal diarrhea, totally wrapped up in this. What do I use? What's the name? You know,
it's normal. That's funny. All this stuff is deep. It's deep. It's in us.
It's can be deep.
Trying to navigate that. Well, I appreciate the work that you're doing in the world and helping people navigate this. There is, I struggle with my wrap up question. Like, I've tried several different things, but one that seems to be sticking is in my membership community. We talk a lot about personal development, personal growth, self-care at the intersection of all these social issues. You know, like when we're taking care of ourselves, we're better able to function in the world around us. So do you have any self-care routines on how you stay the best version of you?
Oh, that is such a wonderful thing. I will say, since I work with families and you are a part of a family, this was one of the adult lessons I had to learn as a caregiver, is how critical the self-care element is, because I don't know if this is your experience as somebody who has raised small humans, but it can be really easy to lose yourself in that job. And some of it is a season, right? You know, where sick kids and soccer games and music lessons and where do I fit? But for me, what I have learned that, and I'll lay this out as if it was like a religious organized thing that I do, but it's really just things that make me happy. I'm very good when I get up in time to see the sunrise. In a perfect world, I love to be out on a walk or a run where I can see the sun rising. That sets my sort of day in motion that I'm aware of. But it also works very well to be sitting on like a porch or whatever. I don't actually have to be out running, but I love that. And the other thing that is really, really helpful to me is that I really like to journal. And I try and journal first thing in the morning, but I will be honest that a lot of times if I journal first thing in the morning, there's nothing in my head yet. And so it's sort of a blank state. But I have learned through practice and application that's very helpful to me to have a space that I can write out whatever's on my in my head, that it's only ever for that page, right? And so if I wanted to, like if I've, you know, I've had a fight with one of my kids or whatever is going on, I can sit down and write, this person is a duty head, 50 times until I've worked through that feeling, and I never have to talk to them about it.
That's a really good point.
Yeah. Yeah. So I journal, that would fall into the journaling, and then quiet time in the morning and getting up in time to see the sunrise, which requires that I actually go to bed at a decent hour. And as the parent of teenagers and young adults, their schedule does not work with me on that. I have really, really struggled with that in the last couple of years because they just are, they're, you know, up to it. They're not doing anything wrong. They're just up later than I up, want to.
Yeah. I used to aspire to be more of a morning person, but now I'm kind of embracing my night owl. I find that I'm disrupting that norm of that we think like the early bird gets the worm, morning person is how we should strive to be. But I find, well, I'm in flow in the evening. Why aren't I taking advantage of that? But I do. There is something to love about the idea of being awake to see the sunrise. And I feel like it's probably healthier for us biologically, you know, circadian rhythms and all of that. But right now I'm sticking to my night owl routine.
And I think that works. I think you have to, I mean, I definitely gave myself grace this year. Like I noticed over the summer, I was exhausted. I was like, I was doing all the things. Am I going through menopause? What am I doing? What's happening? And then I wear a running watch and I happened to notice that I had only gotten like the, it tracks your sleep. And I noticed that the sleep number was low. And then I went back and looked that it had been low. And what I was doing was I wasn't going to bed as early as I wanted to because my kids were up. And then I was trying to get up as early as I wanted to, little air quotes, or I should, right? Like, so I think it's Ben Franklin who wrote the thing like up by six and do the list and stuff like that. And I am naturally left to myself. If you drop me off in a yurt in on the mountain, I would get up early by myself and go to sleep early by myself. But I don't, not based on like a,
I might do it in a yurt because there's no internet or right? Netflix.
Right. So I had to intentionally say to myself, no, I need to not try and get up this early. And I just changed my alarm clock to a later time. And I have felt so much better getting that extra hour and a half of sleep. And so that's my way of saying that if it works right now to be up at night, that's more important than I think anything else.
Well, and I feel like you nailed it too. The sleep is so much more important than either end of it. And I know I've been trying to not do the alarm at all.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah.
Although my son lets his dog into my room when he goes to work. So that's pretty much my alarm with a puppy comes flying into my bed like, hey,
it's time to play. Yeah, no, exactly. And there's so many times in our life where that's the, you know, that's the thing. And that works well if you can get to bed early. It's like the, I guess when we're in our 20s or like our teens in our 20s, it's like we have that very narrow like window. It's like we burn the candle at both ends, stay up late, get up early. That gets harder to do as we get older.
Mm-hmm, definitely. And I have to say that, you know, I'm kind of in an interim and I think I'm going to be moving on from this physical location someplace else, not quite sure, but it's definitely in my mind. Like, I want to be able to see the sunrise.
Yeah.
A friend of mine moved recently and she can see the sun rising from her bed. I'm like, that's perfect.
My gosh. That's wonderful. Although I'm a big believer in blackout shades, like to prevent that. So as much as I love the sunrise, I like to be like, enough with you. No light allowed.
We can go on and on about the morning and the night of it all. But Thank you so much for coming and talking to us. I know that you, I think you have a summit coming up.
I'm going to do a small summit, and I call it a summit to because it sounds so sexy. But I'm bringing together people to share stories about holidays in their family. And so the point of this summit is to give people a chance to just a little window into a variety of different family combinations. I hope to have step-parents, parents, grandparents, and so on and so forth. The first group of people who has like really stepped up and said they want to share their stories are children who grew up with step-parents in a divorce. So there's going to be several of those stories, which I think will be really interesting for people to hear and how they share it together.
And how will people see that?
So you can sign up. You want to actually know how to do it. You don't just want to know how great it is. So that's, you can sign up on my website. So my name is Amy Stone. The name of my coaching business is Amy Says So, which is a play on that parent thing, like because I say so.
Okay.
And so that's where that came from. And so amysaysso.com is where I put everything. And so if you go there, you can find out about the summit, find out about other things that I offer. I try to put free resources up there. And then the summit itself is free. You can come and watch it when it runs.
Free. That's my favorite price.
Exactly. Right. So these are free for like the way the summits work is it's free for like a short amount of time. You get your fill of it. And then if you love it so much that you need, you know, to watch it on replay to help you like fall asleep at night or whatever is going on in your life, then, you know, there's a way to get the replays.
Yes. Amy, you can listen to it on your sunrise walk.
That's right. That's right. Exactly.
Thanks for listening and sticking around to the end. I really hope you enjoyed that conversation. I wanted to take a second to share a story that Amy told me when the recording had stopped about her stepson being assigned to draw a picture of his family when he was in kindergarten, which is a pretty common thing for the teacher to ask. And of course, he drew his extended family, which took up the entire page with people in the corner. And then he had to go on the story to tell about all the people in the picture with the pets and all the different people and how they were connected to him. And for me, that is what it's all about, right? He didn't know that it was something to be shameful for. And hopefully kids never have to feel that shame that a lot of us have grown up when we didn't fit into the traditional ideals of what a quote unquote family is. Like, it's a beautiful place that kids can tell the stories about their families, whatever they look like, you know, two moms, two dads, a mom and no dad, a dad and no mom, you know, whatever it looks like, and not have to carry any of the shame from these ideals that are quote unquote normal or what are should be strived for, when in reality, all that matters is that they're being loved and cared for. So yeah, I hope you enjoyed the conversation and are going to check out Amy's summit. I think I might be speaking. If not, I'll be listening to all the great stories because I'm sure there's going to be some great ones. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to our show. If you enjoyed what you heard, feel free to subscribe and leave us a review. If you didn't enjoy what you heard, reach out to us and let us know how we can make it better. This show really is about all of us, not just me and my guests, but how we can all work together to make the world just a little bit better. And if you'd like to connect with us in other ways, be sure to follow us on Instagram. We also have a free Facebook group where our fans of the show can connect and discuss their favorite episodes. And in addition to that, we have a membership platform, The Collective by New World Normal, where you will participate in monthly workshops, pop-up challenges, and weekly meetings to support a more intentional lifestyle. We have meaningful conversations about important topics, all in a space that is safe, supportive, and encouraging. So join us. And if you'd like to show us some more support, check out our intentional apparel shop online, New World Intentions. You'll find t-shirts, hats, totes, all with positive messaging to help you move more mindfully through your day and help you to create that new world normal. You can also check out our affiliate page, where you'll find our favorite eco-friendly household and personal care products. Thanks again for listening.